Welcome back to Arts About.
Show about art that's a work of art in itself, particularly Sally, since we've introduced Mark Stewart to the format, and there he is sitting over there.
He certainly does add a little je ne sais quoi, doesn't he?
That's it, the je ne sais quoi.
Okay. Arts About is, of course, brought to you by the generosity of the McClelland Sculpture Park and Gallery and facilitated by the Bendigo Bank Studio in which we sit this morning. You're listening to me, Sally Bailey, and Artist in Residence and Cultural Sounding Board John Baird and the ever-surprising Mark Stewart. Brodie Gouzet is on the buttons and keeping us in line, and once more we'll bring you an interesting mix of art-based fact and fiction for your listening pleasure. To start off this week, we have Melanie Thomas, who is the Artistic Director of Dionysus Theatre. She's going to be joining us in the studio this morning to talk about Areta Gamma, the theatre company's third art theatre festival that's coming to the Frankston Arts Centre in a couple of weeks.
She out in the foyer at the moment, gaffer taping her baby to the furniture.
She is, yes, her baby Oliver. It's out there, yes. I wonder whether or not Brendan, the station manager, might like to do a little babysitting while we talk to her. Later on, we're going to be chatting with Xanthi Beasley from the Melbourne Fringe. Apparently, it's time to register, and the festival wants to encourage artists out there to get out of your echo chambers. Stop listening and responding to the voices of agreement on social media and push the boundaries and be political with your art. I couldn't agree more.
I totally disagree.
Oh, do you?
Yes.
Yes, okay, fair enough.
I will.
Good. What tales of daring do you have this week,
John? We've been off to see Vincent, and the NGV had us along there, all three of us,
the other day.
I'm going to talk about what's behind Vincent and beside him and under him.
Yeah, okay, fantastic. I was particularly impressed by your modus operandi there, Mark.
Yes, Sally, I always try and sneak out of the situation.
There we were. We're listening to all the speeches in the Great Hall, and then after we'd endured those for some time, was very interesting, we heard the curator speak.
I loved the way the Mazda chairman spoke about how Mazda and Vincent had something connection.
Oh, I missed that bit. I didn't hear that bit. But then we were finally ushered through to the ante room of the exhibition, which had this huge sort of multi-screened wall of showing a film about Vincent, and we all sat down and had to listen to a little bit more stuff. And all of a sudden I looked around and there was no Mark at all. He'd barged ahead straight into the exhibition, apparently saw it by himself and was gone by the time we got in there.
Lovely to have it all to myself.
Good work, Mark.
Me and Vincent.
Yeah, very good. What are you going to talk to us about this week?
I'm going to continue my talk about Lord Melbourne and the beginnings of Melbourne. I was rudely interrupted by technical glitches last week, I'll continue on with that, and we'll talk and a bit more about Vincent as well.
Fantastic. All right. Well, to set the stage for a bit of cosmological reverie with Dionysus Theatre in a moment, here's the captain of the Starship Enterprise, Captain Kirk's alter ego, William Shatner, with Rocket Man. Areta Gamma is on at the Frankston Arts Centre on the weekend of May the 11th through to May the 13th. And the word arete means striving for excellence or being the best you can be. But for Dionysus Theatre, arete is a festival of short one-act plays written specifically to a theme. The company initiative is this year's third festival is a quote by Carl Sagan, "Science is a way of thinking more than it is a body of art."
Body of knowledge.
Mm. Okay, yes, I beg your pardon. Sorry, mispronunciation there. To tell us more about it is the festival's artistic director, Melanie Thomas. Good morning, Melanie,
and
welcome to the program.
Good morning.
Thanks for coming on to Arts About. What do you think Carl Sagan meant by his quote that science is a way of thinking rather than a body of knowledge?
I think it's all to do with the idea of humanity and where we sit in our place in the world. If you look at his speech that he did based on the astronomer's view of Earth from, I think it was about 7,000 light years away, where we're just this tiny little pale blue dot in this whole big vast universe of things that we do not know and that we have no way of knowing about them yet. And that this whole idea of where does humanity sit within that, with this tiny little dot of this speck. And as he says, we're a mote of dust on the speck of a sunbeam.
Mm. Yes, we are. It's a kind of mind-blowing thought, isn't it?
I often feel bigger than that myself.
Good. So you've used this idea, or this quote of Carl Sagan's, as an impetus to create a festival, an arts festival.
Yes.
The Franklin Arts Centre.
Yes, so this year it's based on this particular quote. The other past 2 years, we've obviously had very differing quotes. Last year it was all about technology and how technology rules our lives. And next year's quote again will be something very different, something that people can use this idea of moral virtue to wrap their minds around and express it in multifaceted ways via arts, via visual arts, via spoken arts, via theatrical arts, music, photography, any way that people see fit to explore this idea.
So tell me a little bit about Dionysus Theatre. So we've spoken with Michelle, who is your PR person, in the past about previous productions, but this is slightly different. So What's the thing that holds Dionysus together?
So Dionysus Theatre is like we are a family. We are based in and around Coringle, quite near to Frankston. We do three main sort of seasons each year. Arete is our first season for the year, where we invite people to submit works to us based on the theme. So directors and playwrights can submit ideas to us, or playwrights can submit their plays to us. Artists, this year we've got three artists, a poet, a visual artist, a photographer, and an artist whose medium is on glass.
Mm-hmm.
So they have responded to the theme as well in that way. We also do one main quite large play each year, which is set, which we perform at McClellan Secondary College. So this year we're doing performance of Macbeth.
Mm.
Last year we did the Greek play Lysistrata.
Yes.
So this year, because last year we focused on the whole idea of femininity and
women of the world take
yes,
over.
Yes, exactly. So this year Macbeth, we're looking at Emma Sproul, our director, our artistic director of the company. She is going to be looking at a very similar idea, but through Macbeth, how that. Women are kind of like the underworld, and they are the ones that help the world go along. And the men are just kind of the figureheads.
Mm-hmm.
So instead of having a cast full of men, we have a cast full of women with only three males this time.
You're allowed to say Macbeth in here?
Oh, you are. You just don't say it in the theatre.
Well, this is a kind of theatre.
Oh, yes. Well, it's... We can say that Scottish play if you would prefer, John.
Doesn't bother me at all.
No, good. So this the festival that you're doing now, Arete. I've said it wrongly again. Arete, isn't
Arete.
It?
Arete.
It comprises 4 one-act plays this time.
It is 4 one-act plays. We also have a performance artist in residence, or two performance artists in residence this year. Gretel Sharp, who is doing what we call the episodes. So she has small little pieces in between each of the four plays. And we also have Emma Sproul, who's also one of our performance artists in residence, who is doing a movement piece mm-hmm. with her girls, who she calls the Pythia.
The Pythia.
Yes.
Well, you have these great things. You also have nymphs, I understand.
We do.
Tell me what a nymph is.
The nymphs, because Dionysus, the god Dionysus, what he used to do is he had these little nymphs that used to flock around him. So Emma Sproul, because she's performing arts teacher at McClellan College, she has an internship, and she selects two, possibly four students a year who do an internship with the company. So they do anything and everything that needs to be done. They will sit and fold programs. They will help the directors. They will stand in for actors that may have missed a rehearsal. Help make costumes. They basically do everything and everything that
it's
they
work
can
experience,
to,
isn't
yeah,
it?
To involve themselves in the idea of what it is that goes on behind a production, not just what you see on stage.
Fabulous. So if somebody comes along to see the performances, it runs from the 11th through to the 13th.
Yes.
So are they evening performances?
They are evening performances. They start at 8 p.m. The show runs for, will run for around about an hour and a half. But then there's also the ability to, because we're at the Cube 37, which is beside Frankston Arts Centre, beforehand and afterwards, we've got the visual artists work out in one of the rooms just off the foyer where they'll be displaying their artworks, where people can go and view their works, hopefully talk to the artists as well about their work, and then afterwards have, you know, deep and meaningful conversations about the performances, and around the idea of the quote wrapped up, as I said, with his moral virtue.
Mm. So you've put the call out through your extended network that this is this year's theme. How long ago did you do that?
We started September last year.
Yep. Okay. And the word can spread as far and wide, or is it peninsula based? Is
no,
it Frankston based?
No, at the moment, because this is only our third festival, we are peninsula based. Mm-hmm. But for next year's festival, Arete Delta, we are looking at making it much wider. So we'll be contacting companies like Playwriting Australia, looking at hopefully trying to sink in and link in with the VCA, so hopefully some of the students might be able to create some work to showcase, make it a great big opportunity for Australia wide because it is such a unique festival.
Mm. Now, it is very difficult, as most of us who work in the arts know, to pull something together like this. I mean, putting together a theatre company is enormous because you have so many people. These things are very expensive. How are you managing to do it? You're in your sixth year, I think, now.
Yes.
And there's a lot of work coming out. Who's supporting you?
We support ourselves.
Do you really?
Yes, entirely. We have a lot of volunteers that spend a lot of their own time working on making props, on costumes, on set design. You know, everything that we do, we rely on volunteers for.
Wow. Well, that's a pretty amazing organisation. You must be giving a lot. There must be a really good feel-good sense in there to keep this going for so long.
Yeah, that's why I said that Dionysus Theatre is we are just like a family. We work together. We spend a lot of time with one another. So we're always all on the same page at the same time. Mm-hmm. You know, we spend a lot of time thinking and talking, you know, about possibilities on where we can take the company, what needs to happen with the company, you know, and Emma Sproul is such an amazing director. She is such a lovely and such an ingenious person that everyone just, you know, you just want to be around her because she is so loving and warm and kind, and she makes you think.
Wow. We better get her in here one day.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, absolutely. Is this the first time with this festival that you've been at the FAC?
It is, yes. Yes, so we're hoping that we will continue to perform there. As I said, we're hoping to make this festival as wide as Victoria, Australian, internationally wide as we possibly can with getting submissions in of work. So we think that being at Frankston Arts Centre, it's much more of an accessible place to be able to come.
Yeah. And so much infrastructure there too that will make will assist with it, yes. How do people get involved? Are you always looking to get more people?
We are always looking for more people, especially people who are willing to help out in backstage. So basically it's just going on to the website, www.dionysustheatre.com.au, and registering interest or coming along and seeing our plays and just talking to us about getting involved.
How would you describe in a couple of sentences what this most recent production is at the Frankston Arts Centre? If you're telling your friend, come along and see it, what is it?
It is a festival full of unique artwork and performances based around a very thought-provoking theme where everybody has approached the theme in vastly different ways, and it will make you think more about science, about who we are in the world and our place on this earth and universe.
Fantastic. No small thing.
No, definitely not.
Well, thank you so much for coming in today. It's very exciting. Arete Gamma Festival is on at the Frankston Arts Centre in Cube 37. It's an innovative one-act play performance and visual arts festival. It runs between May the 11th and May the 13th. I suggest you, as well as going to Dionysus's website, that you could probably also buy tickets at the Frankston Arts Centre's website. Would that be right?
Yes, you definitely can.
Fantastic. We will, of course, put links up on our Facebook page. It's been a great pleasure talking to you today.
Great,
good luck.
Thank you.
Can't wait to see it. Thank you very much, Melanie Thomas.
Yeah, thank you so very much.
That was Genevieve Waite from her fabulous album Romances on the Rise, from a very long time ago. I think it was probably an 80s one. Coming up now, the Melbourne Fringe Festival is an annual independent and open arts access festival held in Melbourne each year and is the nurturing and breeding ground of new innovative arts for both newcomers to the field and also to old hacks who want to try out new work. It runs for 3 weeks from late September to early October and covers a wide variety of art forms, including theatre, comedy, music, performance art, film, cabaret, digital art, circus performance, and furniture design too. It's a celebration of cultural democracy and art for everyone. By embracing diversity and a spirit of independence, the Fringe creates a unique space for artistic self-expression and is the most adventurous, inclusive, all-encompassing, multi-art form festival in Australia. Every year, thousands of artists present more than 400 events in over 160 venues to an audience of more than 350,000 people. It's held in all sorts of venues across the city. It's not just theatres, but it's bars, clubs and even bathrooms. In fact, last year we used the changing room at the MCG to present our show, The Club Raffle. But it isn't only in venues on the fringe. It also includes some very high profile ones as well, like Federation Square and the Melbourne Museum. It's registration time and Melbourne Fringe are calling out for you, aspirous newcomers out there, to give it a go. I have on the line with us this morning independent programming producer Xanthi Beasley to talk with us a little bit more about it. Good morning, Xanthi. Thanks for coming on the show this morning.
Good morning, Sally. Thanks for having me.
You're very welcome. Xanthi, before we talk about the possibility that some of our listeners might get involved this year, let's talk a little bit about the Fringe itself and what role it plays in the culturescape of Melbourne. First up, it's an independent open access arts festival. Just tell our listeners what that means.
Being an open access festival, it means that anyone can be involved. So that's sort of what we get most excited about here in the Fringe, at the Fringe Festival and being on the fringes. It's somewhere for everyone, and it's a platform where you can present any idea, big, small, in any venue, as you talked about, whether that's toilets or change rooms or yes, the arts centre. So like anybody can be part of Melbourne Fringe, and it's just this wonderful place where for 2.5 weeks of the year, like everyone can submit an idea and can have a platform to present and show and get involved with art.
It isn't just for emerging artists either, is it?
No, not at all. We have artists from all different sort of, all different backgrounds and all different times in their career. So we'll have artists who are, you know, well-practiced in whatever their form is, kind of coming back to Melbourne Fringe to try a new idea or taking the Fringe as an opportunity to sort of test something out or present something that they might want to, you know, try before they tour it to the world. And we also have, you know, emerging artists, people who've maybe never done anything before and this is their first time that they'll present something, kind of everybody in between as well. So it's a pretty amazing space where anyone can be a part of it.
Yes, because having been involved in the Fringe myself several times over the last decade, I have to say, one of the things that's fantastic about the Fringe is that it supports, it creates this umbrella kind of supporting network that helps find venues, gives you ideas of the things that you should be looking at, how you should do your ticketing. It provides ticketing. I mean, it gives assistance to artists of all kinds in a lot of different ways that can be incredibly daunting when you first start out.
Yeah, that's right, and I think that's also something that we really love here, and that we also really pride ourselves on is being able to be that support for artists. We have a pretty amazing program of artist services, which is everything from information sessions to give you ideas about how you should do your budget, or you know, information sessions about your social media campaign. We also run, you know, an extensive awards program for people once their idea is up and running, and we connect people in with producers and presenters. But we also are here to do, like, those are the big kind of things, but we're also here to do the really little things for people. So if you're struggling finding a venue, we spend heaps of time talking to artists, and we've got a great network of venues, and we like to match artists and venues up, and we spend lots of time trying to find the perfect place for someone to go. And we also help people with, you know, the details of their registration. We might give them advice on what image they should use, or, you know, how their blurb copy sounds, those kind of things. So it's everything from the little things to the big things. And we have an artist services team who support all of the artists as they're going through the sort of 6 months from registration to putting on the event.
And tell me a little bit about the people that go along to see the shows at the Fringe.
Oh, well, I think they're as varied as our artists are.
Right.
Yeah, so we have, you know, a great audience. They have loyal supporters of Melbourne Fringe, and lots of people often, you know, bring their own networks as well. So it's a great chance for people to celebrate their ideas with their community, with their family and with their friends. And then we've also got, like, a huge network of people out there who are just willing to try something new. And I think that's something that makes, you know, Melbourne Fringe really exciting, is that as an audience member, you could rock up and not know what you're going to get. And, you know, people are really willing to take a punt on new ideas. I think that's something that's quite special about Fringe. You don't necessarily have to be guaranteed of a certain outcome or a certain idea. People often go just to see something really unusual, or to engage with an artist at the beginning of their journey, or as an idea is kind of forming. So generally our audiences are also really supportive of the artists and of the work that they're doing. And I think the great thing too is that our ticket prices are generally very affordable. So it's something that there's few barriers for people to sort of be an audience member as well. We've got lots of free events and artists often that are, you know, Fringe made events, but we also, artists put in free events, and then often our ticket prices, the ticket prices that the artists set are, you know, affordable as well. So it's a great event in that respect.
This year, creative director Simon Abrams has given a suggestion for, or a provocation, I suppose, to lots of artists to participate, get out of the echo chamber, I'm just going to read his quote for a second. Stop listening to the agreeing voices that appear in all your social network feeds. Change your mind, listen to a different perspective, and then change your mind again. Is that a theme, or is that just an idea that perhaps participants might consider when they're creating work for this year's Fringe?
Yeah, I think that the word that you used was perfect. It's a suggestion, it's a provocation. So we have, you know, hundreds of artists in the independent program, and they come to us and they've got their idea already, and we celebrate that and we put that in the festival, and, you know, people are sort of set and ready to go. They've got things that they're exploring, things that, whether it's their art practice or a particular theme or a particular way of making work. So they've got what they need, and they know what they're doing, and they're ready to go. But then this is a sort of suggestion to those artists out there that are maybe thinking, oh, yeah, I'd really like to be involved. I'd really like to create something, but I just need maybe a little bit of a suggestion to help get those creative juices flowing. So this idea is as you say, a provocation for those people who are looking for a bit of inspiration in 2017.
So if some of our listeners are out there and they're thinking, I've always wanted to do something at the Fringe, or I've had this idea in the back of my mind, what do they do?
The nuts and bolts of registering?
Yeah.
Yeah, perfect. The first thing to do would be to jump online to the Melbourne Fringe website and have a look at the little section which says Take Part. And there's stacks of information there about what you need to register your show, what you need to find a venue, all of the kind of background information that you need. The other thing you could do is jump on the phone and give us a call, and we'll talk people through it. But the nuts and bolts of what you require are pretty simple to start with. So you just need the idea, or just the formula, you know, the idea that's starting to form in your mind. You need a name for that idea, because you need to be able to register that in the registration system. You need a venue, and we can help you with a venue as well if you don't quite know where your work might sit. And you need a blurb, so just a 60-word blurb about the work. And those things will set you up to begin your registration online.
Fantastic. So there, and there's also different sort of levels of being involved in the Fringe too. Of course, you can do a DIY show, which is where you find your own venue, you come up with your own idea, but you also run a hub, don't you, which is a slightly curated section of the Fringe.
Yeah, we have our Fringe Hub, which is in North Melbourne. It's in the Errol Street precinct. So there are two venues, and in those two venues, the Arts House and the Lithuanian Club, we have 10 rooms, and those 10 rooms get filled out each night with 4 to 6 events. So across the Fringe Hub program, there's sort of 70 works happening, whether it's in a little underground bunker, a car park out the back, or one of the rooms that's set up to like a black box theatre. We also have our main theatre where large one-off events can happen, or season of work. So yeah, there's plenty of different options and levels and choices there as well at the Fringe Hub, which is also where we have our fantastic Fringe Club, which is an amazing, inclusive, open space where amazing, where incredible art happens each night. 15 events across the duration of the festival where people come and celebrate what it means to be part of the Fringe.
Fabulous. I can't wait. It's opening. What are the dates in September?
The 14th of September,
yep,
until the 1st of October.
Fantastic. But registrations for performing in and being part of the Melbourne Fringe are open now, and I think they close on Monday the 29th of May. You can register, if you register your event before the 15th of May, I think that there's even an early bird discount off the cost of your registration.
That's exactly right.
Thank you so much for talking to us today, Xanthi Beasley. We will look forward to perhaps chatting with you or people from the Fringe as we get closer to the date. But for all of our listeners out there that have been considering getting involved in the Fringe, now's your time. Thank you very much, Xanthi Beasley.
Thanks, Sally.
See you later. Bye.
Bye.
Thank you, Swanee, from a galaxy caravan somewhere.
Yeah, what have you got this week?
Well, Tom? Vincent's on, as we know, yes, in Melbourne.
Yes, we do.
And I thought we might have a bit of a chat around the sorts of things that people suggest are behind Vincent van Gogh and what he was up to. Amongst them, the painter Monticelli, who was from Marseille. Is that make him a Marseillian?
Marseille.
A Marseille. Okay. Well, he was a Marseille. And somewhat of a polarising painter, I would have thought, that people like him or they don't like him. It's interesting that Van Gogh suggested that he'd picked up a fair bit of stuff from this fella and, in fact, considered himself as someone who is continuing Monticelli's work.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And Cézanne also talks about Monticelli and how much of an influence he had. And so to have those two artists, Vincent van Gogh and Cézanne, suggesting that they're influenced by what you're doing, would suggest to me that you're up to the right thing.
Mm.
On the other hand, I've got here...
Not that quote from that homosexual...
Yeah, here's a quote from a man that Mark insists is a homosexual.
Not that there's anything wrong with that.
No. Dear me.
And his name is Timothy Clifford, and he's from the National Galleries of Scotland. And he says, we've been bequested 8 paintings by Monticelli, each one more hideous than the last.
Oh!
In my 21 years here, none has been hung because I think Monticelli produces screamingly awful art.
Goodness
and
me.
And the painting that he's talking about, he described as the worst painting in Britain.
Wow, well, that's in complete disagreement with Vincent van Gogh and
Paul Cézanne.
Yes, it is. Mm. And it also is ridiculous. You know,
what sounds like a nasty thing to say.
Well, saying that something is the worst painting in Britain is sort of as stupid as saying that something's the best painting in Britain. It's you can't kind of make those judgments and have it make any sense.
No.
Anyway, Monticelli.
Maybe they were bad
paintings.
Sorry, maybe they were really bad Monticellis. I'm sure.
I don't like them myself.
The ones that are in
paintings in general.
Mm. Right.
I find them a bit disappointing.
But you've only seen them on your telephone or your
yes,
iPad.
Yes, that's true, Mark. Mm. Yeah, I haven't been to the museum in Marseille that you were describing to me earlier.
No, okay. Well, look, what I'll try and do is actually put a couple of images up on the Facebook page so people can see them, because I'm unfamiliar with him as well.
Most people are, but his bouquet, his flower paintings are quite beautiful.
Oh, well, I'll have a look at those.
And I think the reason, if I can just interject for a moment, the reason that Vincent and Paul Cézanne loved him was because he was one of the first to do plein air painting from the south. So his paintings were considered filled with light. They weren't academic studio paintings.
No, they had a bit of splatter on them.
Yeah, a lot of splatter.
Yeah. And
he did them quickly. And he was a drunk.
Oh, was he?
Mm, big time.
Oh, well, there you are.
Yeah, homosexuals.
That's another
and
reason
drunks.
That Timothy, whatever his name was, Clifford, didn't like him.
Yeah, perhaps. But it's all of this is going to lead us ultimately to the Vincent van Gogh show in Melbourne. Mm. And we went and had a look at that the other day. My personal feeling is, I mean, it's a great way to put a show together to have a wall for every painting. Every mm-hmm. painting has its mm. own wall, and you can, you're given an opportunity to have a look at each painting without it being interrupted by others in sort of almost in complete contrast to the Olsen show where they had them all stacked up next to each other, and it was, I found it quite difficult to look at the paintings.
Do you think that's also a part of actually managing crowd management too? I mean, to an
definitely.
End, yeah, because they're expecting this to be a blockbuster, of
yeah.
course.
Yeah. And it will be a blockbuster. People, the brand is just so good that yeah. there's no way people aren't going to go and see yeah. it. Everyone will have to go and have a look at that show.
But it's not presented.
For me, there were six paintings in there yeah. that are corker paintings, that are hero paintings. The rest of it, not so much. You know,
I'm with you.
Yeah.
I was also very, very pleasantly surprised that most of the paintings, I think there were only two paintings in there that I had ever seen before.
Right.
And I've been to a few galleries, and the Vincent Gallery in Amsterdam, and, you know, the Musée d'Orsay.
Well, I think these
and
are, most of these are from a museum in Helsinki or something.
Yes.
Out there.
Yeah, the
yes.
Kronemuller in Oslo.
Which has quite nice frames.
Yes, they were interesting, those frames.
They
they
were.
1930s Art Deco painting frames. She was an early buyer of Vincent from about 1910, and she had a very good collection. And one of the inheritors sold many paintings to her because they realised she was going to put them into a museum and not try and profit from reselling them.
Okay. But the show itself leads you through a series of little rooms and screens and walls with paintings on them to ultimately the hero painting of the show, which is that spring painting or a summer painting.
Which is right across the front of the gallery itself.
And it is a painting of such authority and power that it's worth having that whatever that show might be around. It's impossible to look at a painting like that without that really high charge coming off it and affecting you in some way. Mm. It's that those paintings are so known and so terrific and so highly charged that it's sometimes hard to get your head around what you're looking at, you know.
Yeah.
I find myself thinking, that is what I'm looking at, you know. I have to think, yep, that is exactly what I'm looking at. It was very interesting looking at it because one thinks of Van Gogh being very vigorous and colourful and desperately. You can feel it in the painting. He desperately wants people to understand what he's seeing, and he's definitely getting there. You know, he's making those marks properly. But they're very carefully made paintings, actually. If you look at them,
very carefully. But what he used to do was paint during the day and then draw from the paintings during the night and then repaint the next day from the drawings that he could keep the stroke marks. And it's a little bit.
I did that with an iPhone.
Yeah. Yeah, well, he probably would have also. Yeah. Although David Hockney, you saw that. Yeah. But the thing about, if I can just say briefly, Vincent's paintings was, it was as if he was there making them in front of you. That's what's so extraordinary about them, is that you see him actually making the brushstrokes. You can see the brushstrokes in action. It's a little bit like Michelangelo when you look at his unfinished sculptures. You can see him actually sculpting so that you're a part of the process.
You're aware of the mechanism
You're a part of their process, and it's as if, in a way, you become part of them. And
it's always a highly charged little bit of landscape, a little bit of real estate, is standing in front of a painting like that in the place that he would have been standing while he was painting it.
Yep. Yeah.
In that area there. And there's a number of paintings around the world that can give you that feeling, and that's one of them without a doubt.
Mm. The other thing I think that's is always really interesting is actually being in a place where you see the progression of an artist's work. And admittedly, you know, the time span from the beginnings to the end of Vincent's prolific work was really short.
Years.
It was really, years. Really a tiny amount of time.
He did 300 paintings in the last year of his life.
Yes, extraordinary. Yes,
yeah.
And but to be able to see the development actually through in that exhibition, which is smaller in some ways than I thought it was going to be, and yet the progression of his style is so dramatic in that small frame
for
of
a painter
time.
It's also nice to occasionally look at a painting made by someone like Vincent van Gogh and be able to look at it and say, oh, he stuffed that up.
Yeah, there was one in particular, I remember you saying he got the background colour wrong.
Well, you also remember that the show is called The Seasons, so it is about the four seasons, and so that last painting you speak about, John, is that portrait is to show you know, this is the man who made these early paintings, you know, the ones beginning in Holland where they're quite dark.
Right.
But already his draftsmanship was extraordinary. And then going through it to, you know, to the south of France and then to Auvergne, where he, not Auvergne, Paris,
Azor.
Where he ended up dying. I think it was Auvergne. Just that, to go from the dark to the light and then back to that last landscape where the crows are coming for him. Just extraordinary.
Yeah.
He was completely and utterly there.
You know. Yeah, but that's it. Mm. Yeah, he was
present.
Right there,
he was
right
in the
moment.
Yeah. Yeah. And he stayed there, and that's immortality. You know, we talk about Google, Sergi Brun wanted to be immortal. No way, man. You know, you look at Vincent or Mozart. They're the immortal ones who've been completely in their time and yet still there.
You know that Woody Allen said, I don't want to be immortal as a result of my art. I want to be immortal by not dying.
Good luck to Woody.
Yeah, good luck with that one, Woody. Is it time now for That's Amazing, I Never Knew That?
I don't think we've got a lot of it, though. I think I'm going to have to make it short. Okay,
right.
So look, I'm going back to Melbourne, which was called had several names, one of which was Bear Part, Bear Heap, Batville, Bear Brass, quite a few different names before Burke in 1937 called it Melbourne, after Lord Melbourne, who I'll finish with before we go on. He was the Prime Minister from 1835 to 1841 in London. He was mostly known for his intense and successful mentoring of Queen Victoria in the way of politics and perhaps spanking.
Spanking?
Yes, he's not considered a great PM, as nothing much really happened during his tenure, but he was considered kind, honest, and not self-seeking.
I think Victoria was very fond of him because she disliked the alternative,
which
was Mr. Peel.
Mm. Oh.
It didn't appeal?
Didn't appeal.
No. Yeah. So Lord Melbourne first became well known when his wife Lady Caroline Ponsonby had a very public affair with Lord Byron, and she coined the term mad, bad and dangerous to know. Don't you repeat what you said last week, meaning Byron.
I won't.
In 1936, Lord Melbourne was involved in a sex scandal when the husband of society beauty and author Caroline Norton, great-grandmother of Norton Motorbikes, tried to blackmail him for having an affair with his wife. It ended in court where Melbourne was acquitted, but as one historian said, it is irrefutable that Melbourne's personal life was problematic. Spanking sessions with aristocratic ladies were harmless, not so whippings administered to orphan girls taken into his household as objects of charity. Caroline Norton was later instrumental in bringing about major changes in marriage equality, divorce and inheritance rights. Good on you, Caroline.
Mm.
So now we're going to go back a few million years. A lot of this information comes from James.
Whoa!
James Boyce's book, 1935, which is brilliantly written. So 40 million years ago, volcanoes began erupting in what is now Victoria. In time, the resulting basalt rock would break down to form the largest area of rich soils in Australia and one of the continent's most productive regions. The lava flow and the basalt plains were concentrated in the west, with the Yarra River sitting astride, I love that expression, the soil divide. The Yarra Yarra was called Birrarung Ma, meaning River of Mists and Shadows.
Mm-hmm.
It was given the name Yarra Yarra by John Helder Wedge of the Port Phillip Association, which I will talk about some future time, in 1835, in the mistaken belief that was the name in Burawong language. He called, asked the locals what was its name, and they replied, Yarra Yarra, meaning it flows. The Aboriginals were taking jokes a lot with the early
Well, you would, wouldn't you?
For example, kangaroo. Apparently they asked what's the name of that, and they said, I don't know, and it sounded like kangaroos, and that's why it's called kangaroo. It means I don't know.
It's like they knew that they were going to be sort of written down, these words they were uttering, and used in someone else's language.
They were playing jokes on people quite often, apparently. Anyway, under Aboriginal land management through fire stick farming, much of the country to the west and north of Melbourne became open grassland, and the lower Yarra was swampland. The heart of the lakes, marshlands and billabongs was a river, but it was a completely different watercourse from today. Which from the Botanical Gardens to Port Phillip Bay flows through an almost totally artificial channel. The river was tidal up to the rocky basalt ledge under Queensbridge, at which point it was 90 metres wide. What the British would call the falls acted as a barrier to the saline tidal flows, ensuring that upstream of the rocks there was a permanent source of fresh water. Only 20 years after settlement, the Yarra was considered undrinkable. At this natural bridge, which was blasted away in the 1880s, salt water met fresh, and within an easy walk there were grasslands and woods. On the northern side of the river there was a wide expanse of flat, boggy land, around 1,000 acres, in the middle of which was a permanent lagoon, a beautiful blue lake of the clearest salt water. All right, well, I've been told to... How much time do I have left?
None.
Yeah, okay, well,
basically. I want to hear more about this, though, that beautiful blue saltwater lake.
I think
lake
is that
so
where
on.
The footy oval is in front of Como now, used to be a billabong or a lagoon
there
of
were,
some
there
sort.
There were billabongs all the way to Sandridge or Port Melbourne, all the way down to St Kilda, and swamps and sedges, and just the most magnificent, 181 species of birds within a mile's radius of Melbourne.
And look at it now.
It was just extraordinarily beautiful. Where the MCG is was a ceremonial spot. Meeting point of all the Aboriginals, the Kulin people. So it's, and that was only 182 years ago.
Yes.
182 years, and look what we've done.
Well, we've built the MCG.
We did.
Well, that's true. Yeah. Goodness me. Well, I think we've run out of time. We haven't even got time for the news. Don't forget, register for The Fringe. Vincent's on. Arita Gamma's on at the FAC over the weekend. Apparently we've got 2 minutes, so I can go on a little bit longer.
Okay, well, let's read the news, shall we?
Yeah, okay. Arita Gamma is on at Frankston Arts Centre over the weekend of May the 11th to the 13th. Go to Frankston Arts Centre website for tickets.
I don't know where I am.
Register for The Fringe, everybody. Just go to The Fringe's website.
Dark Mofo program is out and very, very dark.
Yes, indeed, it
opening
is.
Opening on May the 12th at the MPRG are the photographs of Olive Cotton and Max Dupain. That photograph of the guy on the beach. That's always the same one, isn't it?
Yes.
NGA travel exhibition, and also MPR created one called Deep Cuts.
Yeah.
You're going down to Mofo, Sally?
I haven't bought tickets yet. I really should be doing it. I better get onto it, because apparently it's almost impossible to get in and see anything. So I always go on about it all this year. This year I've got a couple of things on at the same time, and I've been a little bit lackadaisical about getting them. We better move on. Dionysus Theatre have another piece of theatre coming up. I've already talked about that. Arita Gamma. This is a complete shambles, this news this week.
Art Red Hill.
How long have we got, Brody? 1 minute. Oh, good. Go on.
Art Red Hill is open for its last day today until 4 p.m. If you haven't been already, it's open. And that's always a big event, isn't it?
Yeah, you going to that?
Not to the party.
No, but you
might. I'll go and have a look at the show.
Yeah, okay. Very good. If you've just tuned in, you've missed Arts About. But you can catch up with the show via podcast, which should appear on the station website pretty soon. There's a couple of fabulous young men here who seem to be uploading it regularly now. The show is also repeated on air and streaming Wednesdays at 12. You can find a link to our Facebook page on the RPP website. Please join us again, 11 a.m. next Sunday. And remember, everybody, we may not know everything about art.
Well, we know what we like. We know how to get a baby off the furniture. It seemed to be having some trouble getting the baby.
Oh, I know, the gaffer tape. I think it was old gaffer tape.